Moto Casino, American Social Casino.
Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends, with thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA.
Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited.
Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino, American Social Casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
COTA has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at COTA.com/service changes. That's COTA.com/service changes.
Welcome back to the Thought Police.
Welcome
Matt Kelly,
back.
We've been away.
It feels like ages since we've done this.
Yeah. I know, doesn't it? Because we were both on holiday, which we're going to talk about in the next podcast. But I think today what we have to do, right, is welcome everybody back for the first time in about 3 weeks, right? Yeah. Where loads has happened in some ways, but actually loads has not happened. You know, I saw a great meme that somebody put out on Twitter today where it had somebody with a to-do list and it said things to do and underneath it said nothing. And then he was scratching it out. And that kind of sums it up, right?
Well, I've been thinking for ages about doing an entirely blank front page of the New European.
You got an honourable mention on the radio today, actually. One of our guests, I think it was Andre Walker, who's a guy that does a lot of stuff for us. He used to work for Breitbart. Yeah. He's a keen reader of the New European. Well, he'd seen the front cover and was talking about how ludicrous it was that they were calling, you know, Boris Johnson and trying to kill the saboteurs, you know. And I mentioned your name. I said, my good friend Matt Kelly runs that, you know. So it's a free advert, I want you to know, for the new European. But I mean, you guys must be loving this, mustn't you?
Well, yes and no, with the usual caveats that I would sooner see the United Kingdom not fall to bits. But from a newspaper point of view,
but
it's
you're
great.
Quite happy to help it fall to bits in the meantime.
No, I'm trying to say, drumming
I'm trying up to save all it. Sorts of people.
I am trying to say.
Right. So we came back from school, from holidays, right, last week. Yeah. Fantastic. Loads happened. It was very dynamic. I was absolutely convinced that we were about to make some history. And then it all went the wrong way, or at least it all went the other way. And now they've prorogued Parliament, so they've come back from school for a week, and now they're off again.
Now they've got 4 weeks off, five weeks off.
Yeah, it's incredible, isn't it?
And genuinely, nobody knows what's happening.
No, nobody does. I mean, everyone I speak to, I mean, aside from the obvious, you know, suspects on Twitter who are making out that, you know, Boris Johnson's a dictator, even though he's the worst dictator in the history of dictators because he can't get a general election, he can't get a bill passed, he can't hang on to his own cabinet, you know, he's you know, he's really not up there in the ranks of Stalin and Putin, is he? Let's face it. So, but nobody knows because I get the feeling, and I have always had the feeling, that Dominic Cummings is, as he's been described before by Alistair Campbell, as an evil genius, right? He's supposed to be the guy pulling all the strings. Nobody really cared that Amber Rudd resigned. Nobody was that surprised about it. You know, when you see people on television calling it devastating and apocalyptic, you're kind of going, really?
Although he seemed really shaken by his brother going.
He did seem like that, but I wonder if there's more to that, you know, because there's family stuff that maybe we don't know about. I mean, they're quite an odd family.
Well, they're very tight. They are very tight as a family.
They are. I mean, I used to work a bit with Rachel Johnson, right? Yeah. Back in the early days of doing this show that I did on Talk Radio. And she would never talk about Boris. Yeah. She didn't want to talk about him. She didn't really. I mean, aside from the sort of the odd little anecdote about their childhood, she never wanted to talk about her brother's views or anything they might talk about. Yeah. But he is the only lever in the family.
Yeah. Well, Dad is massively Remain.
Well, he was a massive part. He worked for the EU, didn't he?
That's right. I mean, Rachel had a was writing a column for us, a diary in the New European. And I said to her, when the election campaign was kicking off with Boris, I said, look, we are going to be fairly brutal towards Boris.
Yeah.
And do you want to take take a step back from the European for a while? Because obviously it's going to be a bit embarrassing for you. And we agreed to that. And to be honest with you, I haven't gone back to her yet to say, do you want to come back in? Because our brutality has only accelerated since...
Well, maybe you should get Joe on board and see what he says. Well, I mean, you never know, because it might be that they've fallen out quite bad.
Well, I don't know. I just think Joe... I've never met the guy, but he seems like a decent enough fella. And I suspect he just got a bit bored of having to look at his brother across the table and thinking, you absolute arse, what will you do?
He might be thinking that, or he might be thinking, you know, I don't actually belong in here and he should never have been there in the first place, because he's a bit of a remainer, isn't he? I mean,
he's a very capable politician, isn't he?
Is he? I don't know. I don't know much about him, to be honest. I mean, I've never met the guy. I've never seen any great prognostication from him about anything.
Prognostication?
Good word, though, isn't it? It's the second time I used it the other day and somebody went, blimey, what's that? So I thought I'd use it a lot.
What is that?
A prognostication.
Yeah.
It's a kind of a statement of intent.
Right.
You know, I'm going to prognosticate
on what I'm about to do. Yes, prognosis of
it's that kind of thing.
That's very good.
And so I don't know where it comes from, though, because occasionally I come out with these words and I've probably forgotten that I even knew them. You know what I mean? And sometimes it just happens.
I once had a radio show with Simon Mayer, because often you read a word, but you don't know how it's pronounced.
Right.
And I'd read this
word. In radio, that happens all the time.
Triumvirate, right?
Yeah.
But I didn't know how it was pronounced. And a triumvirate, obviously, is like three people leading, you know, heading something.
Yeah.
And I said, this triumvirate, right?
That's easily done, though.
And Simon Mayo stopped and said, what did you just call it? A triumvirate.
Yeah. Right.
And he said, that's not how you pronounce it. And I said, how the hell do you know how the Romans pronounced it?
Well, this is the great thing, right? There's a marvellous film called Thank You for Smoking, which I don't know whether you've
seen it.
But it's all about this guy who's the PR for the tobacco lobby in America, and he's having trouble with his wife, and he's getting a divorce, and he's got his son, who's, you know, he's taking around the place. And he says to him, you know what? You can win any argument if you know how to argue. It doesn't matter, you know, what the actual, you know, facts are. It doesn't actually matter what the substance of the argument is. And that's so true.
Well, funny you should mention that, because in the London Review of Books, to which I subscribe, which is an excellent periodical, by the way, there's a review of a Michael Gove biography written by a guy called Owen Bennett. And in the review...
Is that Owen Bennett, the one who writes for Telegraph?
He used to work at The Guardian, I think.
And he's the Whitehall editor, I think.
That's right. So he's written this really, apparently, a very good book about Michael Gove. And in it, there's this theory that, because Gove was brilliant at debating at the Oxford Union, that basically that's what he's like. He will just pick the opposite side and argue it.
Right.
And the point to him is just to win the argument.
Well, don't forget, in some of the schools that these people went to, that's what they're taught.
They are
taught how to do that. I mean, I'm always amazed that people are aghast at one of the things they use against Boris Johnson is that, you know, he wrote two pieces.
Yeah.
You know, he wrote one about staying in the European Union and one about leaving. Well, that doesn't surprise me at all.
But you read that differently to me. Because we've mentioned this before.
Yeah.
You said, well, a lot of people do that in testing an argument. And all I just genuinely thought that the guy was on the fence, didn't know which way to go. And my complaint about that is that he now presents himself as the arch Brexiteer. And I don't think he ever was. I think he's just sort of fallen into that role.
I think that in time, when we look back on this whole period, the Brexiteers will actually be seen as the people who were progressive.
Of course you think were.
Well, no, not of course.
And people like me.
Well, because, you know, quite often people sort of align historical arguments to this, right?
Yeah.
And they go, I know, the Brexiteers are like the flat earthers, you know.
Yeah.
They're like the people that don't believe in anything.
Yeah.
Actually, it's the complete opposite.
Yeah.
Because the people who are the Remainers are the ones who want to stay where they are.
Status quo.
They don't want to go anywhere.
Yeah.
They don't believe that you could go over the horizon and actually find a bigger, more beautiful place
to
live in.
You're absolutely
right. They want to stay where they are.
You're absolutely right. So what historians will look at, and we can't at this moment, is how it does pan out.
Yeah.
And I think there are, you know, certainly if Brexiteers out there are thinking, you know, Britain is this amazing place and we are better than being trapped in the European Union and we can make our own way, etc. You know, I buy into that. I don't necessarily believe I have that same sense of confidence. And I do agree with you that the, you know, if Remainers are being painted as this sort of kind of liberal, progressive crowd, well, there's an element of that that's not true, because you're right, we do want to, we are fearful.
And also,
we're fearful of this massive change.
An awful lot of the reaction by Remainers to what's happened in the last week or so has, I think, given away their problem. which is that they are not very nice people, many of them. They're well, quite... They're
I
quite,
think you could say that about both sides.
Well, you could, but the people I would say who are nastier on the Leave side are the kind of people that you see fighting the police, right?
Yeah.
The kind of people who are basically football hooligans.
Yeah.
And who probably are quite rightly called racists.
Yeah, the Tommy Robinson
crowd. That crowd, yeah. But the actual normal run-of-the-mill Leaver is not like the run-of-the-mill Remainers, many of whom are very well-educated, have got very good jobs, they're barristers, they're lawyers, they're solicitors, they're doctors. You know, these are professional people, they're lecturers, they might be, you know, sort of fairly well-educated television stars or whatever, and they'd be pretty horrible about their opposite side.
Yeah.
And I think that betrays more about them, because the ordinary Leavers are not like that at all.
No, well, I agree. And we've
you know, they should know better, in other words.
Yes, and I think that this idea of slagging off voters is unacceptable. You know,
we've had the Labour guy
and stupid, you know,
just this week, who was on television, can't remember his name, somewhere up in Yorkshire, saying that basically he thought that most of the people who voted Leave were stupid.
Yeah, well, that's ridiculous. And it's counterproductive, and
well,
it makes the argument much harder for people like me. I mean, don't get me wrong, I think there were people who were utterly ill-informed or uninformed on both sides, you know, and there was a lot of kind of emotion in it, but I'm not one of these who thinks that everybody who voted Leave just saw the bus and thought, right, that's it, I'm going to vote Leave. There's a lot of people who have really deep-seated fears about the way their communities are going, about the way their local economies are going.
But you don't tend to see very much of the kind of Philip Pullmans of this world, let's hang Boris Johnson, a bloke who's supposed to be a well-educated, grounded...
Phil Pullman.
Phil Pullman, as I call him, right? he doesn't like that. But, you know, I call it, and he says, oh, of course, I was joking. Well, that's all very well, but it's not really the sort of joke I would make.
No.
I wouldn't joke about hanging someone from a yardarm, you know, I just wouldn't do it.
Although Johnson talks this language day to day, you know, about dying in ditches and stuff like this, you know.
Oh, yeah, but I mean, Johnson gets away with it, but he hasn't called for hanging anybody. He didn't call for hanging Jeremy Corbyn. Imagine if he said that.
Yeah.
And then later went, oh, well, it's just a gag. It's just a gag, you know, it's only joking.
Yeah.
It's, I mean, you know, it's still there are still people who blame Joe Cox's murder on Brexit.
Yes.
Right? And of course, there's an element of that, but it wasn't about that. It was about a nutter, you know, who should never have been in anywhere allowed anywhere near a politician. But, you know, let's not get involved.
But there are nutters. There are still nutters out there.
Oh, yes.
And I'm sure...
But there are lots of nutters who are galvanised by things like this.
Yeah.
I mean, I was down in College Green, Westminster, all of last week. There's people now dressed up as a clown. You know, the guy with the loud hailer was driving around in a car.
Yeah.
You know...
It's berserk.
It's ridiculous. Yeah. It's totally bonkers.
And you do, even I, look at that kind of stuff and think, gosh, there should be some more protection for people, you know, because the tempers are getting really frayed.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I'm surprised it hasn't kicked off more than it has.
Yeah, well, no friend of mine, but I'm Owen Jones, who writes for The Guardian.
Yeah.
And I remember watching him walking away from the common and being harassed by some seriously nasty people.
I've seen that.
And there were coppers There were coppers walking behind him, and I just thought, that shouldn't be allowed to happen, that. It's clearly an intimidating...
And clearly, people like that guy, Goddard, James Goddard, who was done for harassing Anna Subri. I mean, the idea that he doesn't understand there's a difference between having a kind of a relatively civilised difference of opinion and walking next to somebody and shouting in their ear that he doesn't think there's anything wrong with that.
Yeah.
You know, the bloke's an idiot.
But there's they've no seen it on TV every night. They've seen that kind of...
Well, I mean, for a while, and this is brought back towards the beginning of the year, a lot of MPs just stopped coming to College Green because they couldn't be bothered with the gauntlet of sort of hate that they had to literally walk past every time they wanted to come in and see people.
I'll tell you what I thought was weird. Remember Boris Johnson walking down that town in Wakefield, wasn't it?
Right.
And there was that big fella there giving him huge levels of grief.
Yeah.
And he must have been about 6'4", very well built, and he was very agitated.
Yeah.
And there was about 4 or 5 feet distance between him and the Prime Minister, and there were clearly 2 or 3, non-uniform security guys around him. But you do sort of think, in Britain, we still have that real contact with people, where that would never happen in the States.
No.
You know, never.
No.
The security would make sure.
No, I mean, the President only goes to places that have been cleared, that have got a guard of honour inside and out.
Exactly.
You know, he goes in his bulletproof beast,
yeah,
and he walks a very short distance. If he talks to anyone, it's inside a building.
Yeah. But if that guy was a nutter, and he wasn't,
Nigel Farage was famously milkshaked when he was on that tour up around just before the European elections.
Yeah.
And I mean, that guy could have had a knife.
That's right.
You know, I find
it could have been acid.
Yeah. You know? I could find it quite well, as, you know, Jo Brand joked about, rather than much to her distaste. I mean, the problem is that the world is kind of geared for reasonable people. And if you have people who are not reasonable, bad things can happen. And I'm not sure that you want to kind of give up the democracy that we have to make it more difficult for people to do what they do. I wouldn't want to stop the people from shouting and trying to interrupt my radio programme. But by the same token, it's bloody annoying.
Well, and also, it's become just background noise now. Yeah. There's no effect of it.
Also, I mean, at the time, and this was on Thursday, again, as I was walking away, having seen that Boris Johnson had lost the vote, having seen that the House of Lords had then passed it overnight, which they weren't supposed to do, it was meant to be this week. And this is the other thing that's interesting about Dominic Cummings, because I had the previous, you know, the Blair, Tony Blair's Lord Chancellor, Charlie Faulkner, who was great, by the way, always great, very smart guy, called me a disgrace, you'd be glad to know, for trying to compare Alistair Campbell with Dominic Cummings.
Excellent.
And trying to compare the way that the Labour Party dealt with dissent in the same way as the Tory Party, you know. Yeah. But I walked away from that day, which Boris Johnson, whichever way you cut it, had clearly lost. And I think that was when the day his brother quit as well.
Yeah.
And that guy with the big loud hailer, the Stop Brexit guy, was going, "Stop the coup."
That's right.
And I'm like, "What fucking coup are you talking about? There is no coup." If there had been a coup, it would have actually come from the other side, one. And if whatever it was a coup, it's all happened now.
Yeah.
Because we've now got a situation where the Prime Minister of this country cannot even control the order paper inside the House of Commons.
Yeah.
So how is it a coup?
It's the least effective coup of all time.
Yeah. Isn't it ridiculous, though? And I'm afraid people like Owen Jones and his ilk have been responsible for whipping people up. Fortunately, they don't whip very many people up.
Yeah.
And all they can really whip them up into is a sort of, you know, avocado sandwich and Prosecco kind of picnic.
Endless bandwagon,
you know,
of
let's
things
just
to get
sit,
angry about.
You know, sit around, you know, discussing Brexit on a tartan rug. You know?
And the point is that it has absolutely zero effect. And we've seen that. Even the huge marches, I think, on balance, have very little effect on
I think it's
on
now
the
having the opposite
weather,
effect,
you know?
Because I think, as we've seen from the polls that were done this weekend, you know, Boris's lead over Jeremy Corbyn is even bigger than it was the week before.
Yeah.
And if that's the result of him being accused of being a dictator, of Jeremy Corbyn refusing to have an election, and of the Labour Party and all the other sort of opposition parties getting together to stop no-deal Brexit, then Boris is on the right track here, isn't he?
I'll tell you where there has been a coup, I think, which is inside the Tory party.
Yeah.
And, you know, the stripping out of these moderate MPs to make a more extreme version of the Tory parties, I think, and then you see the parallel happening in Labour.
Yeah.
Tom Watson's up for deselection, or they're talking about that. Someone was talking about Keir Starmer but not being pure enough.
Oh, yeah.
You know?
Well, if the momentum guys keep hold of the reins, you know, they're all going to go.
So you've got this kind of polarisation on both sides, where you're getting a very extreme Tory party, a very extreme Labour party, and something, I think, has got to come up through the middle. You know, there's got to be a place for centre ground politics. And I think as these things get more and more extreme, that group of people are going to find more and more in common. You know,
but funnily enough, though, you say extreme, and I sort of shrink from using that word. Other people use it as well, and have used it.
Yeah.
And in fact, it was the start of my argument with Charlie Faulkner, I think, because I said, surely all they're doing in the Tory party is what you lot did with New Labour. You worked out that basically you couldn't have militant in charge anymore. You couldn't have the Michael Foots of this world running Labour. You'd never get into power.
Yeah.
So instead of which, you hatched this entirely undemocratic plan to basically launch Tony Blair, Peter Mandelson, Alistair Campbell and Gordon Brown on an unsuspecting public.
How can you say they voted them in 1997?
Yeah. Oh, there's a funny thing. You like people that vote now. So you don't like the ones that voted to leave the European Union, but you love the ones that voted Tony Blair in.
Yeah.
I was a Blair fan. You know, you didn't have to walk very far to get me to say that I think he was a great Prime Minister. I always get castigated for that, because all he now gets talked about is as if he was a war criminal and that's all.
Yeah.
Right? And
which
I'm
is
not,
bollocks, I think.
And I'm not in favour of that at all.
And by the way, I just on that point, I read a brilliant blog by somebody, a woman who was saying, Don't call him a war criminal. It's wrong. Even if you think that, yeah. Because there are real war criminals, yes, out there.
Well, I would offer you up in that case. Don't call Boris Johnson a dictator.
Yeah.
Don't call him an extremist.
Yeah.
Don't call him far right, which is what Jeremy Corbyn calls him all the time. It's bollocks, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And it belittles the people who actually, and a fascist. I mean, a fascist. I mean, just on my way up here. I was asking Gina Miller a question because somebody from my Twitter feed had said, oh yeah, well, Gina Miller's lost her case. She hasn't lost her case as far as she's concerned, because apparently appealing a case doesn't mean you've lost.
Right.
But in my view, when you appeal a case, it means the first time you haven't done well. You must be appealing
against something.
What are you appealing against? You didn't win it.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, but they've now rewritten the language in such a way that it's apparently the case has a merit.
Right.
Right. So she hasn't lost it. But the bottom line for me is that somebody underneath it says, you keep on your fight against the fascist, Gina. And it's like, what is wrong with people?
That's nutty. I mean, because...
what is wrong with you?
You know, there are fascists out there. Again, let's...
They're not running the government.
Words do have meanings. And the minute you start conflating Boris Johnson with Mussolini, then you're running into trouble.
You're in a bad place.
It makes Mussolini look either good or Boris Johnson look ridiculous.
Well, I mean, he's certainly got better hair than Mussolini. No question about that.
Coda has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the East and North sides, including the Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal, Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.
But here's the thing. Dominic Cummings has worked in various places over time, right? Now, I haven't found anyone in Parliament that I've been speaking to who has much to say about him, because I think they're either frightened of him or they don't want to say what they want to say. Now, I don't know why that would be, but he seems to have been quite effective working with Michael Gove in the Education Department, because I know some mothers who have been moaning to me about how, you know, it's his responsibility, the school curriculum's up to cock. He was very successful in the Leave campaign, and all the people who said he wouldn't make that work were proven wrong.
Yeah.
So I wonder if all the people who are now saying that he's getting it wrong are also going to be proven
wrong. Well, there was this quote which sent a shiver down my spine at the weekend, which was apparently Cummings saying to a source, if the people are wound up by what we've been doing lately, wait until they see what's next. They're going to melt.
Yeah. Well, I mean, amongst the things that people have been writing about, and I mean, you know, this wargaming is now a thing. You know, people talk about the wargaming that you have to do to work out all these various different things. Because I'm very much of the opinion that there's no way that Boris and Dominic Cummings did not see last week's vote coming.
Mm.
There's no way they thought that they were going to win the Hillary Benn thing, right?
Yeah.
There's no way that they thought that the 21 Tories would vote with them.
Yeah.
They might have been a bit surprised by Philip Lee's sort of rather over-dramatic defection.
Yeah.
But, I mean, that just made him look a prat, as far as I was concerned. You know, and every Tory MP I've ever spoken to about him said, well, he hasn't been a Tory for years, you know, so forget it. Yeah. And, you know, Amber Rudd coming out and saying that, you know, this is a terrible government and aren't even preparing for anything other than no deal.
Yeah.
They're lying to everybody. You know, they got rid of all these loyal MPs. Well, I'm sorry, if you vote against the government and you give power to the opposition and to the EU instead of keeping hold of it,
but isn't that
that's
what,
not loyal.
But isn't that what Boris Johnson and Jacob Rees-Mogg did time and time again?
No, they didn't. They voted against Theresa May's deal,
which
did not give power over that deal to the Labour Party.
But
Absolutely not.
But it undercut Theresa May completely.
Yeah,
I mean, I think there's a great stench of hypocrisy.
It's a very different thing. You're entitled to have a view inside your own party about the party's policy. You're not entitled to be part of bringing that party down and that government down. That's a very different thing.
Well, I mean, I think you could make a quite straightforward case to say that, you know, Boris Johnson and Jacob Rees-Mogg's actions were absolutely at the heart of bringing Theresa May's government down. And the big irony for me...
Well, I'm very glad, for one, that they did, because her government was hopeless.
But the irony now is that people are saying, well, probably if there is a deal of any sort, it'll be pretty much Theresa May's deal.
Maybe.
With a few little add-ons.
But when Theresa May's deal first came in, before all of this happened, you know, my line on that was, well, it's the beginning of something that we should probably go with, because at the end of the day, you know, this will be a process. It's not going to be a straightforward, oh, now we've left the European Union, everything's okay.
Yeah.
There will always be negotiations, right? So I think my recommendation initially was, let's go with this deal.
Yeah.
And then you can finesse it later.
Yeah.
But other people didn't like that. you know, many of them in the Tory party.
Yeah.
And I've spoken to lots of them, and they won't like it again.
It'd be a very interesting
And point. I don't think he'll be stupid enough to try and represent it to them, because they won't vote for it.
It'd be a very interesting question to ask those 21 MPs what they would do if they had 20/20 hindsight. Would they have voted for Theresa May's deal and kept Theresa May?
Well, lots of them did.
Yeah.
See, lots of them did. I mean, I had a little set to with Ed Vasey last week in the tent.
Yeah.
Took exceptions to me calling him arrogant, funnily enough.
Yeah.
Even though he was incredibly arrogant.
Was he?
Yeah. But he said, he ended up just repeating the same answer to every question.
Right.
I voted for the deal three times.
Yeah.
And I went, yeah, but that's fine. But what are you going to do now?
Yeah.
I'm very happy that I voted for the deal three times.
Yeah.
I said, yeah, but, you know, you've now basically voted to give power away from your own party and your own government to somebody else. There's going to be an election. Are you going to run as a Tory MP? You're not going to be allowed to.
So do you think that there's some... Your theory is that there's some sort of... there is a game plan behind all of this.
I think so.
Dominic Cummings is in there. He's got a game plan in his head.
I believe so. Because I think they can't be so stupid that they would have expected to win that vote.
No.
They must have known that if they asked Jeremy Corbyn for an election, he would say no.
Yeah.
Right? So they're playing this...
Well, I don't know if they did know.
No, I think they did.
Yeah.
I think you would...
But there was always a chance that... Don't forget, Corbyn's initial reaction was, bring it on. And until somebody with some intelligence spoke to him and said, Jeremy, we're going to get absolutely hammered if you do that.
But then he realised that he'd been saying, bring it on, for 3 years.
That's right.
And now he doesn't want one.
Yeah. I know, I think it reeks of terrible kind of...
It's awful.
Cowardice is... perhaps a bit too strong, but it's the dawning of reality on Labour that actually this thing they've been shouting for, if they actually got
The two things that those people who listen to my show will know about, there were two interviews last week that I thought were interesting. One was my interview with Lisa Nandy, who basically has worked out through a process of some bizarre, alchemy, that there was never a deal.
Right.
Okay,
right.
So Theresa May's deal wasn't actually a deal.
It wasn't a deal.
And a few Labour people are now using this mantra that actually we've never had a deal to vote on.
Right.
So we can't be accused of voting down a deal. I actually said to her, I said, so you're telling me that Theresa May never went to Brussels, she never came back with a deal, which you then voted down three times. That never happened.
Yeah.
And she said to me, no, you're just being difficult now. Well, I'm just trying to find out what the truth is,
I have
right?
to be honest, she's never struck me as like being...
She also represents Wigan, which is a 70% Leave constituency. So I said to her, right, this was prior to Emily Thornberry, on Question Time.
Yeah.
I said, so, Labour supposedly now the party of Remain. You know, Jeremy Corbyn has more or less now come around to Keir Starmer's view that the Labour Party is not only the party of Remain, but will continue to, even if they become the government, ask for a second referendum, in which they will basically campaign for remaining in the European Union.
Yeah.
And I said, well, are you now the party of Remain? And she said, well, no, I'm not. And I said, but you're in the Labour Party.
Yeah, yeah.
She basically ended up saying that the Labour Party is the party for Remain if the constituency was a Remain constituency.
Remain, yeah.
But if it's a Leave constituency, they're not.
Yeah.
Absolute crap, right?
The total.
Emily Thornberry, which was brilliant on Thursday night. We will... get a better deal from Brussels, we'll bring it back, and then we'll have a second referendum and campaign against our own deal.
Yeah, it was bizarre.
I mean, you couldn't script this
absolutely
stuff.
Absolutely bizarre. But they get away with it time and time again.
It's incredible, isn't it?
I'll tell you, I read a brilliant bit about Cummins. And if you look on the internet, he's got a blog where, I mean, he's clearly got a brain the size of a house, you know, and he discusses all these kind of scientific game theories, you know.
He's one of these guys that clearly doesn't switch off.
No, never.
I mean,
ever,
he's never going to sit around at home.
No.
I was listening to an interview with Stephen Fry, funnily enough, last night on Five Live, which was really good.
He's great.
He is. Yeah. Even though I've had, you know, differences of opinion with him on Twitter, as everybody has. I don't think he's even on it anymore. But he was saying he's sort of a bit manic, you know, he's got this bipolar thing going, but part of the side issue of that is that he has to be busy all the time.
Yeah.
And he said that he actually said to his husband one day, when he realised he didn't have anything in his diary, and he was just sitting at home, and he said, you know, he was actually started coming out of cold sweat.
Getting anxious.
Because he had
about
nothing
that.
To do.
Yeah, I'm a bit like that.
Yeah,
you? Yeah.
And I wouldn't know that, because you don't do much, really. I mean, you disguise it well. I mean, you know, so... You know, it's not like I come up here and there's a lot of work.
I don't
on.
Do anything, but I do worry about it a lot.
Well, that's the main thing. And he said, I've always been like that ever since he was a kid.
Yeah.
He says he can't just watch Netflix or sit down and watch telly.
Well, Cummings is clearly of the same ilk,
right?
But one of these things in the blog was about they made this analogy about, well, the problem was, how do you, in a game of chicken, you know, where you got two cars, like...
Is this chlorinated game of chicken?
No, not chlorinated chicken. This is old-fashioned chicken. And you got two cars sort of heading to each other, and the guy who swerves first is the chicken, right? How do you convince the other guy that you are not going to swerve? And the answer is, you can't just tell them you're not going to swerve. Right. You've got to do something that proves it. So you've got to cut the steering wheel off and wave it in the air, you know, so that the guy coming at you thinks, oh my God, he is definitely not swerving. I've got to swerve. And this was the theory about how they'd set forth with Boris.
Yeah.
You know, again, the red lines, die in a ditch, October the 31st, do or die.
And not care about anything.
No,
21 more Tories down.
That's it.
Don't care.
We've cut the steering wheel off. We are not moving.
And actually, logically, they're not any worse off now than if they still had those 21 plus 2 plus 1. Well, 2 now.
Yeah.
I mean, if they actually, those 23 people from Amber Rudd all the way down to Dominic Grieve, if they were still sitting as Tory MPs, it would make no difference because they're not going to vote for anything that Boris wants in terms of a no-deal Brexit.
That's right.
So he might as well cast them adrift.
And we're
it's actually quite
we're
smart.
We're heading to a general election anyway, so...
Yeah. You know. Although the good news is, I suppose, for those people who don't like having elections, it's not going to be now, I think I read it can't now be before November.
Right.
You know, so it's more than likely to be sort of mid to late November now, I think.
But that means then that we cannot have no deal unless they are prepared to completely...
unless there's something else that's in the pipeline that we don't know about.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, because the Queen, everybody seems to think, is going to give her royal assent to the bill.
She has to.
I think she... Well, she doesn't have to. I mean, I just don't think there's any reason for her not to.
It would be the first time in a long, long time.
But I presume that... nothing now happens until the 14th of October.
Yeah. Well, Boris Johnson, must stop calling him Boris, hate that. Johnson is now...
Well, you can't just call him Johnson, because I'm just going to keep asking you which one. So you'll have to call
Boris Johnson, the Prime Minister.
Yeah.
He's now got 5 weeks to go out and try and get this deal. You know, he was stood there with Leo Varadkar yesterday, talking in Dublin about, you know, how I don't want no deal, I know what the consequences are. Varadkar, I thought, in comparison, was completely cool and statesmanlike and said, look, you know, if you don't want no deal, don't come back with anything with the backstop.
The problem with Varadkar, though, is he's a bit up himself, right? He thinks that he represents the European Union. He doesn't. He represents Ireland.
Well, he knows that he's got the European covering his back.
He's doing their bidding for them. Right?
Well, I'd put it another way. I'd say that put it this way. The European Union is 27 members plus us.
Yeah.
And Ireland's nowhere near a big country and all of that. However...
No, but they do a lot of business with England and Britain.
But the European Union are very keen that Ireland understands that they won't get thrown under the bus in all of this just to do a deal with us, because they know that Ireland and Hungary and all these other smaller countries will be looking at France and Germany and saying, are you just all about you and your BMW
trade
deal?
But I think when he sort of intimated that, you know, his relationship with us will change depending on how we leave the European Union,
it
was a little bit above his pay grade,
I would say. Do you think so?
Absolutely.
He's the Taoiseach of a sovereign country.
So what?
Shouldn't he be able to...
Well, he doesn't speak for the European Union, though, unless they have instructed him to do so.
He's speaking for himself, though, isn't he?
No, he's not, because what he should remember is that there's a lot of agreements that are just between the UK and Ireland.
Yeah.
For example, the way that traffic moves back
all in the Good Friday Agreement.
It's all not just in the Good Friday Agreement, but part of a trading agreement that Britain and Ireland have outside of
the
anything
open borders
to do with,
dating back to the 50s.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, yeah, yeah. And the fact that the Irish citizens have been able to come to Britain and work, absolutely no problem at all. That's always been the case.
Yeah.
If he wants to start, you know, jollying up the old European Union flag and saying, you know, we'd like whatever they get, then he's going to lose maybe some of the things he's already got, which would be unfortunate for him, because he's not in a position of strength in terms of, you know, one country versus another. Because, unfortunately, Ireland is, as you say, a very small country.
But, I think he is genuinely, deeply concerned about what this is going to do to his nation. And
so he should be.
Yeah, but don't forget, they didn't ask for any of this. You know, they didn't bring any of this on to themselves.
They sort of did, because they actually voted once before, did they not?
Yeah.
The European, inside the European Union for the euro, and they didn't want it.
Yeah.
Do you remember that?
I do.
And then the EU said, well, actually, we don't think you knew what you were doing, so we're going to give you another go.
That wasn't quite how the EU phrased it.
No. Well, funnily enough, but that's effectively what they did. And that's, why don't you guys have another go?
Yeah.
Think again. And then you can join the European Union. You created one of the most fantastical currency problems because all the people who had made what can only be described as dodgy money in Ireland, which was quite a lot of people, who had loads and loads of pubs, right? They didn't know what to do with them. Because they couldn't take them to the bank, who would say,
where did all this come from?
You're paying tax on any of this.
Yes, that's right.
So there was this...
Good. So what you're saying is it legalised the whole Irish economy and
population.
Completely
changed it into something completely different. Yeah. Ireland as a nation has become a very different place to the Ireland that I knew when I was a kid growing up.
Yeah.
You know, probably for the better. But what my point is that, you know, the relationship that England and Ireland have had historically created an awful lot of goodwill before the EU was ever even thought about.
Yeah, for sure. Well, so, I mean, it's been a bit of a roller coaster ride in that. And you know,
well, I guess the massacre at Croke Park was a bit of a setback.
Rule and,
the massacre at Croke Park was a bit of a setback, as you say. But I mean, you know, the point is what I'm saying is that you know, he is now very firmly, I'm part of the European Union, not part of what used to be known as the British Isles.
But he's got to be, hasn't he?
I don't know if he does.
For self-preservation.
I don't know. I mean, Ireland has become very reliant on European money.
Yeah.
And that's another thing that they've benefited from,
massively,
which we haven't.
Yeah.
And much of that money has come from us.
Well, some of it has.
A lot of it has.
But it's, again, if you take the broader picture, I understand people saying, oh, look, it's the Irish or it's Romania or whoever it is getting all the spare cash. Mm. But the more Ireland's economy grows, the more trade we do with them, the better it is for us, the more they consume.
That's true.
You know, and
but that's the trouble with the European Union. You don't necessarily want a group of unelected bureaucrats in a place known as Brussels deciding which countries are going to be given beneficial trade relations or which countries are going to be given beneficial cash injections in order to make them do better so that we can all benefit.
Yeah.
You know, that's a very dangerous world.
Well, I think, I'm not sure it's that simple. I think all those kind of decisions are taken at member state level. So the 28 people sitting around the table would be involved in that. And there are prime ministers, their prime ministers and everything. Anyway, I mean, look,
the EU doesn't like people who dissent from what it is that they call the project.
No,
right?
It doesn't.
They do not like anyone who wants to decentralise power.
Yeah.
In fact, they want to centralise it even more.
Yeah.
They want a federal. They want a United States of Europe.
And this is.
And most people in this country who have voted to leave don't want that.
And a lot of people who voted Remain don't want that.
No,
I don't want that.
Right.
You know, but all I've ever said is that I think we have got a better chance of guiding the European Union as a partner around the table rather than being outside.
That may be true, but it's never been the case, has it? Because we've never really guided them, because they've always treated Britain as something of a sort of rather recalcitrant child, you know, who doesn't really do what it's told.
Well, they were right, weren't they?
Well, yeah, but there's a reason for that, because I think culturally we're much more like that. And if you look at places like Spain and France, not so much Germany, because I don't know much more about that, but there's a lot of people in those countries that don't like the European Union as well.
For sure.
You know, Italy, they're not keen. Greece, they're not very keen.
Yeah.
You know, they don't want to be over, you know, sort of run by bureaucracy and these kind of punishment beatings that they hand out in the EU. Like they were going to say to Poland, if you don't let in more refugees, we're going to pull all your money.
I mean,
that's not the way to behave, is it?
No, I don't think it is. But, I mean, here's a point that maybe we can agree to close on.
Yeah.
That once this is all over, and if the UK does come out of the European Union, then there is going to be nothing to hold them back to being as hostile as they choose to us. And I think what we've put them through and put ourselves through over the last nearly four years now, there will be a lot of grievance against the UK, and you'll see trade deals going away from us. And don't forget, they are our biggest trade partner by a million miles.
There's some kind of deal that's just been done with a Spanish company to build a tank, which was apparently awarded by the European Union, which would normally have been given to us, which has been given to Spain.
Yeah.
So it's already started.
Yeah.
And they've already done that. They've already moved, Land Rover already moved to Slovakia because they got a better deal from the European Union. An awful lot of the tariffs that are set on what we do are set by the European Union.
Yeah.
You know, so it's six of one, half dozen of the other.
But I think once this is all so-called done and dusted,
then
we're only just walking into another whole world of difficulties.
Well, that's life, isn't it? As I keep saying to people,
that's what all the people say.
If you can't walk out of the door and know everything, that doesn't mean you shouldn't walk out the door, does it?
I don't know. It depends what you think's on the other side, really.
Well, is there a 12-foot crocodile out there?
Yeah.
Then I wouldn't go out.
Is there a massive big hole? A sinkhole?
Is Dominic Grieve waiting for you to talk to you?
Is Donald Trump's flabby embrace on the other side of the door?
Yeah.
Maybe.
Maybe he's inside.
Maybe. Donald Trump will probably be out of office by the time we come back to rely on him for his for our great trade deal.
Well, don't worry. We've had a great relationship with the United States of America before Donald Trump ever came along. You know, they have still been our greatest ally.
Yes.
You know, I married someone from America, for heaven's sake. Look how that turned out.
This is often cited in the White House.
I have children who are dual citizens, you know, all as well. Anyway, we've run over time, I think. We've come back so full of ideas. I'll catch up with you on Thursday. This is the Thought Police.
Bye-bye.
Loads happened. It was very dynamic. I was absolutely convinced that we were about to make some history. And then it all went the wrong way, or at least it all went the other way. And now they've prorogued Parliament, and so they've come back from school for a week. And now they're off again.
Now they've got 4 weeks off, five weeks off.
Yeah, it's incredible, isn't it?
And genuinely, nobody knows what's happening.
No, nobody does. I mean, everyone I speak to, I mean, aside from the obvious, you know, suspects on Twitter who are making out that, you know, Boris Johnson's a dictator, even though he's the worst dictator in the history of dictators, because he can't get a general election, he can't get a bill passed, he can't hang on to his own cabinet, you know, you know, he's really not up there in the ranks of Stalin and Putin, is he? Let's face it.
Often you read a word, but you don't know how it's pronounced.
Right.
And I've read this
word. In radio, that happens all the time.
Triumvirate, right?
Yeah.
But I didn't know how it was pronounced. And a triumvirate, obviously, is like three people leading, you know, heading something.
Yeah.
And I said, this triumvirate, right?
That's easily done, though.
And Simon Mayo stopped and said, what did you just call it? A triumvirate.
Yeah. Right.
And he said, that's not how you pronounce it. And I said, how the hell do you know how the Romans pronounced it? Donald Trump will probably be out of office by the time we come back to rely on him for our great trade deal.
Well, don't worry. We've had a great relationship with the United States of America before Donald Trump ever came along. You know, they have still been our greatest ally.
Yes.
You know, I married someone from America, for heaven's sake. Look how that turned out.
This is often cited in the White House.
I have children who are dual citizens, you know, all as well.
How can you say they voted them in 1997?
Yeah. Oh, there's a funny thing. You like people that vote now. So you don't like the ones that voted to leave the European Union, but you love the ones that voted Tony Blair in. Moro Casino.
America's social casino. Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends. With thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA.
Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited.
Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Coda has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.